Now, I know that some people watching this will want us to ask this question and they want to hear your answer. And that is, some people say that you've got hold of the conspiracy, but you've got hold of the wrong one, because what you've got hold of here is evidence of back structures on a big screen in the Nevada desert, like the Truman Show. And that's what was actually being kept quiet. Now, it's not a stupid question, but I'm sure you can answer it. Let's hear it.
We go into the book in this in great detail. To my mind, there is zero probability, and I rarely use the word zero probability, that the lunar landings were faked, given all the politics, given the Nazi backstory of what they were looking for, given von Braun, given the Kennedy-Khrushchev thing. Why would we go if there wasn't something there to go for? But the actual proof that this is not done in a studio and is actually for real comes from an anecdotal story of my own eyewitness testimony, meaning I was at JPL when we made the transition from Downey up to JPL to cover the Mariner 6 and Mariner 7 mission. And I was there as someone in the auditorium being squired around by the head of NASA Public Affairs for JPL, named Frank Bristow, was walking this guy around who was putting some little pamphlet on every reporter's seat in the auditorium, and then was led outside to hand personally a copy of this memo, whatever it was, to every reporter who was in the press room waiting for one of the press conferences to begin. So I got one and I read it and I was flabbergasted. Because here was a guy being officially sponsored by a NASA official handing out a document that said the entire Apollo 11 mission was just completed in a studio, a soundstage in Nevada. The whole thing is a fake. And I wished I had kept that document. We're now looking for some reporter who at the time actually is a sidebar, is a kind of a, you know, isn't it cute what things happen around these missions, actually published a story based on that two-page Mimeo handout. Because somebody had to have done it. Possibly at the Pasadena Star News, which is one place we're looking. Possibly even in the New York Times. I haven't looked. I haven't had time to look. The point is that there were other reporters, both well-known and no one will ever hear of them, reporters. 1,000 people were covering those missions in those days. Somebody had to have kept, just as an historical anachronism, a copy of that memo. Now what that means, as I say in Dark Mission, is politically, NASA itself was starting the rumor before Neil and Buzz and Mike Collins even got home that Apollo was a fake. Why would NASA, in their wildest dreams, be starting a rumor that would mature 30 years down the road? The answer is inoculation. The answer is that if it ever came out that there was real stuff there that they were hiding, they could divert the conspiracy crowd to the fake conspiracy that we never went to the moon by planting the seeds, by planting the meme in the culture generations before, which would then bear fruit, which it did on Fox Television. Gosh, Fox Television, that's interesting. And it would divert those people from asking the real question, which of course is, what did they find on the moon, and when did they find it, and when did they decide to lie about it for all these years?
So the astronauts, even Mitchell, you're saying, had a visor that actually made it possible for them to see this wall of glass.
So they could take the pictures of the right stuff.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And photograph it.
Yeah.
So when you asked Mitchell, and he said he didn't see anything, What is your theory on why he's lying?
See, Carrie is like a good attorney. She knows the answer to the question. She never asks a question where she doesn't know the answer. So I will give her the answer now that she knows. I think Ed Mitchell is telling the absolute truth.
Okay, now this answer I don't know.
Ah, so she didn't know the answer.
No.
Because she hasn't read that part of Dark Mission.
That's right.
The reason, the resolution of this paradox is that Ed Mitchell has had something happen to his mind.
Oh, that answer I did know. Okay.
The astronauts, okay, I believe, have been tampered with.
Yes.
There are all kinds of papers now coming out in the open literature about technologies which can selectively wipe out your memories on specific events. And I believe, and I have in the book, Mike and I carefully put in document after document after document of reference to all of the astronauts at one time or another have complained about not being able to remember what they did on the moon.
Yes,
and they
absolutely.
Come up with various rationales.
Yes.
You know, like some of them, like Pete Conrad, used to come up with a flip answer. Oh, it was real, super, gee, whiz, golly, boy, was it great. Which was a cover for the fact that he was very frustrated in private conversations on the record with certain reporters that he couldn't remember. Mm-hmm. We had a conference in Wyoming several years ago. Wyoming is a hotbed of CIA and ex-intel guys who are all bought big, beautiful farms and ranches so they'll keep their mouth shut. They're basically bought off. That's how they're bought off. I was invited to present data on Mars by one of these former CIA big rancher types who had a very beautiful wife who happened to be a medical doctor. Without mentioning names, because they're still alive and I, you know, would like to keep them alive, things got really, really, really weird. Because I was ostensibly invited to present the Mars data, Cydonia, our work, you know, at the UN, our expose and the NASA briefings, you know, at NASA Lewis, on Mars. And suddenly, I surprised them by presenting a whole bunch of stuff for the first time on the moon.
Ah.
And this individual freaked out.
Oh, wow.
And his wife, who it turned out had been one of the doctors who had debriefed the astronauts, the crew, she orbited around the conference, never even coming in, talking to some of the people who were there with us and saying, I don't know why this is so disturbing, but I just can't sit through this. So it's the old
Amazing.
Who watches the watchers. Even, I believe, she had had her mind altered so she would not remember the truth after she had done. So how far up the chain does this go? How many watchers have they had to change their minds with some technology? And the technology is not perfect. I think we're seeing evidence that the technology again and again breaks down.
Mm-hmm.
If you read, for instance, Buzz Aldrin's first-person testimony in his own books, he talks about how Jay Barbary, who was a colleague of mine from NBC News, I knew Jay back when I was with Cronkite, I was just a young whippersnapper, and Jay is now this senior space correspondent still covering the shuttle for NBC, asking very perceptive questions from the press corps. Jay innocently invited Buzz to a, I think it was a Kiwanis Club meeting, up in Palmdale, which is one of the NASA facilities north of Los Angeles, where they, in fact, have tested a lot of the components of the secret space program and the secret military program, including the shuttle. And so he invites him into this meeting, you know, a whole bunch of rah-rah, you know, jet jockeys and engineers and, you know, the old slap you on the back, good old boy network. You know exactly what I'm talking about. And he asks, you know, they're sitting on a stage and they got two chairs and it's like very conversation. And he says to Buzz, Jay asks Buzz, well, what did it feel like to walk on the moon for the first time? And in his own book, Buzz Aldrin says that at that moment he became violently ill. He had to rush off the stage. He went out to the alley and he threw up.
Wow.
And his wife came out all upset because she thought something was seriously wrong, which of course it was. This is classic aversion therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Classic aversion therapy. Mm-hmm. So yes, I believe the astronauts are blameless.
Mm-hmm.
All except for Neil Armstrong.
Okay.
I think Neil Armstrong fully has his memories.
Mm-hmm.
I think Neil Armstrong, as the icon, first person of the human family now to walk on the moon,
mm-hmm.
has been left alone. And that is why Neil Armstrong never says anything in public about the space program. They wind him up and bring him out at a couple of these ceremonies. Like in 1994, he was at the White House with President Clinton and a bunch of students, and it was a whole arranged photo op. And he stands there making a speech, and I had someone the other night analyze the body language and his voice and talk about how incredibly nervous and incredibly upset he appeared to be, which you can see on tape. We have the tape. And what he started out by doing was comparing all the astronauts, the entire astronaut corps, all his colleagues who landed on the moon, to parrots. He said, and parrots don't fly very well. Parrots also don't tell you the truth.
Oh my.
They tell you what they're told. At the end of his speech, he turned to the students, because students represent, of course, the next generation, the perfect photo op. Always plant students in your audience so you make people think you're concerned about the next generation. Mm-hmm. He looked at them, he kind of calmed down at this point, and he said, there are wonders beyond belief on the moon for those who can remove truth's protective layers. Now, I was never taught in school that truth had protective layers. Who's protecting the truth? Mm-hmm. He was obviously referring to Brookings, to NASA, to 40 years of lies.
I have a couple of questions as well. Once again, at the risk of irritating you, Richard. there will be many people who've read your book from cover to cover, and they also read Dark Moon, and they looked at those images, and I know you're familiar with those images, they're the ones where the crosshairs seem to be behind the image rather than in front of the image.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones where you seem to have multiple lighting effects in terms of multiple shadows. Now, those are good questions to raise again. I know that you have dismissed those. Can you just explain briefly on what grounds you have done that?
Well, dismissing is if you don't deal with it. What we have done on Enterprise and in Dark Mission is we have dealt with most of the common questions very effectively and very scientifically, and I think we have been able to put the issue to rest, because what people who naively raise some of those questions don't know is the secret technology that was used to take the pictures. For instance, this super extraordinary color film. If you take that film and you make a first-generation copy in the camera, and then you take that copy when you bring it back to Earth and you make other copies, what you can do, because you have such latitude, is you adjust between the light and the dark so that it looks as if it's a perfectly lit with floodlight, spotlights, fill light picture, when in fact it was the film. It was the technology, the secret hidden technology of Charlie Wyckoff's XRC film that allowed them to do that. In terms of multiple shadows, no, they're not multiple shadows. There appear to be multiple angles. And these are people that don't understand how shadow angles depend on surface, you know, landscape geometry, hills, valleys, craters, where rocks are. Then there's the common canard that they couldn't see stars. Well, Ken Johnston reports, remember, he's the official guy in charge of the photographs in the Lunar Receiving Laboratory from Apollo, told by his people to eventually destroy all but one set of the films, who walked through one building one day and noticed that there were a group of people, three or four people, who were doing something with negatives and paint. They were painting out the sky above the horizon. And as any good manager at NASA, he said, what the hell are you doing? And the answer was, oh, we're strippers, which is a kind of a flip answer, because that's a term that comes from Hollywood, where they would make matte paintings and they would strip them into the background film so that in Forbidden Planet, you know, you see the illusion of the monster against the Chesley Bonstell painting of the twin moon alien world, Altair 4, that the expedition landed on. So he explores it a little further and he says, well, what are you really doing? Well, the guy in charge of these several women that were doing this, they were women, by the way, he said, well, what we're doing is we're painting out the stars so that it doesn't confuse people. Now, the stars, as part of the original NASA photograph, have been a major cause of concern to a lot of these people who've been concerned that you don't see stars on a lunar picture, and they think naively that you should. Well, in fact, if you take a picture in the daytime on the moon, you're not going to see stars. The reason is the stars are so incredibly faint and the sun is so bright that you cannot expose one picture that will be decent exposure of the surface and see the stars at the same time. You can do this on any day or night here on Earth. You know, go out on a moonlit night or moonless night and try to get stars and then have someone light up the foreground with floodlights, and you'll quickly see the foreground will totally overexpose even with weak, feeble artificial illumination, because the stars are so incredibly weak that you can't record the two on the same shot. Significantly for what Ken says to us is that the people who were doing the painting out obviously were painting out this stuff. They were painting out the glass ruins, the sparkles, the pieces of glass that just at the right angle would kick sunlight back into the camera lens, and it would be unmistakable. There was something there in the sky that should not be there. The fact that they thought that they were painting out the stars and not the glass means they also believed the lie. The lie was different at every level, and at their level of the lie, they had been told, we're getting rid of the stars because they'd be confusing. So it's an internally consistent story that has elements of first-person testimony, photographic evidence, corroboration on the web all over the world now from someone leaking amazing, untouched generation versions, probably scanned from these original XR ektachrome transparencies. And it all fits together as a coherent whole that NASA has been suppressing real lunar ruins for over 40 years.
Somebody who is a valuable insider source of ours, I had the good fortune to be able to talk with him at length just a very short while ago. And I know that you are very suspicious of any insider's testimony, and I understand why. But let me show you the story. And although we had...
Well, it's not accompanied by physical evidence.
Of course.
See, the difference from Ken is he had an actual set of physical prints.
I understand that.
Which hold up.
Yeah, I understand that. But this is a kind of conversation that we could have had over dinner last night and we didn't have it. I asked this guy and had a lot of conversations with him about a lot of things. And I thought, you know, I never asked him whether we went to the moon or not. And I said, hey, did we really go to the moon? And there was the longest silence. And I didn't know what he was going to say. It was like a really, really long pause. And eventually, he said, yes. And he said, but it wasn't that simple, he said. He said, we went there with help. He said, we had advanced technology that was not part of the formal Apollo program, was not part of accepted science at that time, but helped us get through the Van Allen belts. And actually was also built into the LEM that enabled it to take off. Without leaving the blast crater and so on and so forth.
Uh-huh.
And he said the astronauts were aware of this, and this is the reason that he attributed to their reluctance to be interviewed and so on and so forth. He said it's a very complicated story, that he said most of the missions went to the moon. I didn't push him on that. But he said, yeah, he said those guys, he said it was all set up on a fake stage. That's not true. But some of the stuff was actually fabricated in preparation for this, so that the whole story would hang together in the public eye because of the complicated PR aspects of it and so on and so forth. Now,
do you know this person's background?
Yes, I do.
You know what role he played in NASA?
He wasn't in NASA. He wasn't in NASA.
Okay.
He's worked in a lot of black projects. He was an electronic specialist. He had the opportunity. He worked in Livermore. He worked for a lot of black projects. He knew people.
He worked for NOAA.
He asked questions. He wasn't involved in NASA. Well, he wasn't involved in the program.
Without talking to myself, because I think I know who you're talking about, my impression would be that he's another victim of the lies, different at every level.
Okay.
He's been given, which satisfies his national security experience, the lie that they're covering up the technology.
I understand.
Because nowhere in his lexicon are they covering up ancient ruins.
Yes. It's not first-hand information he was giving us. It was something that I believe he had learned during the course of his work. But that
from
might
someone
be
else.
Because he was talking to a cop.
Yeah, right.
I absolutely understand.
So, yeah. But you understand how he can be honest and sincere and still totally mistaken.
It's the biggest problem.
Because it gives him something that makes sense to him. Oh, they're going to hide this technology. Which, of course, if we're right, there's been a secret development of real anti-gravity technology in parallel with the public official Apollo program. There are people, in fact, Joseph Farrell is one of the people in his books, this is before he got together with me, who raises this as a possibility. In fact, all the people that look at those LEM liftoffs and don't understand what they're seeing, because they don't have the proper background in physics. Everything we see, including there are craters. I've seen close-ups under the LEM of the crater. What makes it so interesting is that when you blow away the dust, see, the natural model says that you've had dust falling on the moon for billions of years, which means it should be a nice, light, fluffy layer.
So like snow, if I was to hold a rocket engine over you know, snow after a snowstorm, you'd get a nice, beautiful crater, right? Instead, what the astronauts found from trying to stick in flags and do drilling and other experiments is underneath that thin surface, like a few inches, maybe an inch or two, the lunar surface is damn tough. It's hard. And it gets harder the deeper you go. That, of course, is in consonance with the idea that there are ruins underneath that surface. There's buildings down there. There's walls, there's beams, there's girders. The stuff you see above ground is only half the story. That's why on the current missions orbiting the moon tonight, as we're taping this, the Japanese unmanned mission, size of a Greyhound bus, the Chinese unmanned mission, size of a VW bus, they are loaded with dozens of instruments up to and including high-powered radars to ping the lower levels and see, I believe, the ruins underneath the lunar ground.
Okay, is it the ruins under the ground or is it an underground base?
Same difference. You mean, well, base implies
a modern-day underground base.
The moon has the surface area of North and South America combined, 15 million square miles.
Right.
If we have a base there, it's pretty small. So the most of the stuff you're going to find is ancient. And it's easy to separate the two.
Okay, do we have a base there in your opinion?
I don't know. In my opinion.
Do you think...
Given that there is probably, in all likelihood, a secret space program, I would imagine there is a base. There's probably more than one. You can't do everything from one place. I mean, could we explore this planet from one base? If you have the technology that can get there in a couple of hours, effortlessly using anti-gravity, and we do have shuttle video showing this technology, which I loaned to Art Bell some years ago, and he really kept the secret. I said, Art, just sit on this. Don't tell anybody. And he kept the secret. I eventually gave it to Whitley Strieber through Art. It wound up on NBC as part of Whitley's program. I firmly believe that stuff is our stuff. That we're not looking at ETs, we're not going to look at little grays, little alien guys, we're looking at our secret space program. And there are reasons, again, very careful reasons laid out in the book, why I think it's our stuff. Well, if that's true, it would be silly to imagine that we hadn't built a base or bases on the moon. If for no other reason, you need a place to function to loot all this stuff and bring the good stuff home.
Okay, we've heard that there are auroras flying shipments back and forth, and I guess people, I don't know.
Well, aurora is a code name. It could mean anything.
Oh, really?
We know in the 1980s there were a series of sonic booms in the air over Los Angeles which were recorded coming in over the Pacific and then landing probably at Edwards, you know, the super secret...
Right.
Research facility up there. We heard that they were aurora. That's all we know. Remember, this is, you know, a mystery wrapped in an enigma shrouded by a constant veil of lies. So getting at the truth, unless you've got pictures, with a paper trail, with a pedigree, you can't believe. And even these, you have to do some decent analysis to understand what you're seeing. I mean, there are people that look at this and they say, Hoagland, I haven't a damn clue what I'm looking at. Because they don't understand how to think in terms of simple optical physics. They've never driven toward the sunset in the afternoon with the sun shining on their dirty windshield to realize that they're seeing dirty windshields.
Okay, a key prediction. Remember, science is nothing if it's not prediction. A key prediction of the whole lunar dome model, the ancient lunar dome model, that somebody was there, they lived there, they built incredible, extensive stuff. Apollo was sent there to find out what they could bring home with the primitive rocket technology of the 1950s and 60s. We're doing a lot better now, by the way, secretly. And one of the key predictions of the model is that if you have glass domes, glass ruins, people who live in glass houses see prisms. They see stunning arrays of color. And if you lived in a glass house and you looked at the sun or you look at the reflections and all that, you should see prisms over and over and over again. In these photographs, the model says that we should be able to find prisms. So I started looking. And this is a picture from Apollo 17. You can just see a hint. This is one of the newly scanned, leaked images that somebody's putting, 16 megabyte files. So anybody out there can go to the web and download them and use Photoshop, and bingo, you'll confirm exactly what is there. If you turn up the gain, right up here, above these mountains, which aren't mountains, by the way, they're old eroded ecologies, you find a prism. You find a stunning color shard of glass, spectrally refracting light. Now, in the model that was raised earlier, that this is all done in a soundstage, Because soundstages would be made of steel and aluminum and, you know, things you build out of. We don't build out of glass here because glass is fragile. Glass breaks down. Glass is not steel on Earth. Only on the moon is it 20 times stronger than steel. So this, if I had to bet the farm on one piece of data that we're right, it's these prisms. Because in looking at these photographs and looking at the way the color emulsion of the ektachrome, the super ektachrome that Charlie Wyckoff, my friend who I worked with and used this film for him, developed, I know that those three layers, yellow, magenta, and cyan, when converted into a color ektachrome transparency, were obviously able of recording. Here's another one. This one has a prism going up and a prism going down. It's called birefraction. It's a double refraction. And as you look through, here's a comparison. The one I showed you first, here's the second one. Notice the angle is different. That's because it was taken at a different angle in relation to the sun. So the physics of the refraction, of the formation of the prisms, here's one of my favorites. This is a, you know, the PR shot. You know, Cernan wearing the commander stripes with the flag, you know, but if you look up here in the darkness, in the dome that's over Taurus Littro, and you enlarge it, lo and behold, you find a prism, a double prism. And you can actually see it's aligned with the stringers in the glass. There's another one here. There's another one up here. These are overwhelming proof, an optical physicist's proof, that what we're seeing is in fact real. Here is probably my favorite. Here is Harrison Schmitt in the moon, lunar landscape, Taurus Littoral Valley, gray landscape, everything we've been told. Here's a color chart. All right, here's our calibrator, red, green, and blue. This is the grayscale. It's called a gnomon. They would put this out in the photographs to calibrate the color. Well, the color is strangely unsaturated. It's like NASA, when they put these out, they've turned down the color. You want to see why? Because when you turn the color back up to the way it should be, bingo, you have sunrise on the moon. You have layered sunrise, just like looking outside here. As you're filming this, look outside, you will see the same layering of light and color under the Earth's atmosphere, except we all know, and we can prove, there is no atmosphere on the moon. Just watch a star as it goes behind the moon some night. It does not twinkle. It disappears like that. So John Lear, dear John, you're wrong. There is no atmosphere on the moon. But there are these huge grids of glass. And when you look in the right way at these pictures, remember, this is an official picture. Not only do you see the color spectrum of a sunrise, but right here, there's this nice, incredible prism made of glass, refracting sunlight back into the camera. And notice the angle. It's almost horizontal because when Saarinen took this picture, the sun was to his back. He was facing almost directly away from the sun, and the geometry of the domes made the prism flat. This, to me, is overwhelming evidence of these ancient lunar domes.
And we've learned that NASA is very happy to adjust the color of their images from the Mars images.
Oh, instantly.
Instantly.
Wonderful.
I'm done.